This is KUNV, and you're listening to Neon Eden. I'm J. Patrick Kulikin, columnist for the Las Vegas Sun. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and at lasvegassun.com. My guest today is Sam Skolnick, whose new book, High Stakes, The Rising Cost of America's Gambling Addiction, looks at the rise of casino gambling and its impact on society. Sam, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Patrick. Appreciate it.
Sam, we were colleagues at the Las Vegas Sun, and you had a particular interest in the issue, although you didn't cover it at the Sun. Tell us about the genesis of this book.
Sure. My interest is actually twofold, both as a reporter and personally. And let me talk about my personal connection to it first. When I moved to Seattle about a little over a decade ago, in the year 2000, for a reporting job out there, I started playing poker, which I had enjoyed as a kid and a teenager, but I really hadn't played much as an adult until I moved to Seattle, where they had a whole bunch of card rooms that lined the suburbs of the city of Seattle. And so I played a bunch, and I've gotten fairly good at the game. But that said, it's also become problematic, and it was pretty clear to me early on, just within a year or so after I moved there, that it had become an issue for me. And this was kind of a shame, in the sense that I had never before or since had any sort of addiction issues with any sort of substance or other behavioral type of problem. This was new. And so it's something that, in the end, I'm still grappling with. But as I was going through it, sort of simultaneous to that, in Seattle, I wrote about gambling in a couple different ways. First, in 2001, I wrote this big feature about sort of the growing poker subculture in the Seattle area, which I liked, but sort of a lighthearted look, as a lot of features on gambling are. But the more that I spent time in the card rooms myself, the more that I realized that that whole area, Western Washington, had been inundated with gambling. I realized by the time 2004 rolled around, 2004, that there was a more serious story to be told about the consequence of what was happening in that region as a result of the spread of legalized gambling. So my editors graciously allowed me enough time to write a three-day front-page series for the Seattle Gazette. And
what was the takeaway of that series, Sam?
The takeaway was that the spread of legalized gambling had caused problems, that there were rising addiction rates, as could be seen by the explosion, really, of Gamblers Anonymous chapters in Western Washington over that decade, something like 4 to 28 chapters, which is like a sevenfold growth in that time, and the numbers of people who were attending each meeting had also just about doubled. And so what I also was able to find was that social costs were rising at the same time as a result of this addiction. And these social costs range from everything like indebtedness and bankruptcies, home foreclosures, though I studied that more recently for the book, but not in Seattle, all the way to gambling-related crimes, such as burglary and domestic crimes, all the way to suicides in the worst cases.
How do we pinpoint those social costs? I think that's a question a lot of people have.
Sure. Well, it was a variety of things. What studies had been done, I was delighted to use, and there were some state studies that touched on these issues. But what I also did was just sort of report 101 reporting. I talked to, for example, on bankruptcies, I talked to bankruptcy attorneys and others, and judges and others who handled these types of cases. And has there been a rise specifically? Have you seen a rise in the number of bankruptcies, just using that one instance, that have been caused by gambling? And I got enough yeses that it became pretty clear to me that, and this was mirroring what was happening in jurisdictions around the country. So I didn't go into it, nor have I gone into the book with a sort of a predisposed idea as to the conclusions I want to reach. But that said, the literature out there kind of leads folks in a direction. I just wanted to verify, was this true or not? And I found out that, in Washington State, it was. And so after that series came out, ever since, I realized, as mentioned, this is happening all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Gambling has exploded over the last 15 years. Revenues have doubled. In the last 25 years, they've grown something like ninefold. to about, it's a, almost $100 billion a year business, legalized gambling throughout the country. That's the profits that commercial casinos, Indian casinos, and the state lotteries make every year. And so with that type of a country, my thinking was, you know, hey, a book, there needs to be a book about this. So I was fortunate enough after lots of time and effort to find an agent and a publisher and to move forward with a book.
Well, congratulations on that. My guest today is Sam Skolnick. He's the author of the newly published High Stakes, The Rising Cost of America's Gambling Addiction. Let's return, Sam, to other states. It seems to me that legalized gambling has spread in part because it's almost the path of least resistance for elected officials. It feels like easy money. Is that
Absolutely.
What you found?
It is, without doubt, and I think you phrased it, you know, just right. Politicians, it's a recurring theme in state after state. These are politicians who, in fairness to them, were facing unprecedented bad times. There was a 60-minute story not long ago about the budget gaps being the biggest ever in states, and question being, what can they do to help close these gaps? Well, you have a few options historically. I mean, you can cut services. You can raise taxes, but that's as unpopular on the state level as it is on the federal level, and Nevadans know that. Here's a third option. You can try to redistribute some wealth. You can raise some money by importing legalized gambling with the hopes that money comes in and that the profits are made are spread to, in part, a good portion of it to state coffers. But here's, you know, what in state after state, what politicians to take into account, I believe, sufficiently are the what happens when this does happen. They believe that it's basically a harmless, painless revenue stream, when in fact, study after study shows that in different jurisdictions, various, many, many independent ones, that addiction rates rise, at least temporarily, and in many cases, it appears permanently. And then what happens from that are these rising social costs, just like I mentioned had happened in Washington State. I will add one point, and the states, as well as the gambling industry, and I call it the gambling industry. I know that they're known as the gaming industry, but I've always found that kind of amazing when the actual activity is gambling itself. Nobody ever says, "Yeah, I'm going to go out gaming this evening." We say we're going to go out gambling. So I made a point in the book, Patrick, to say that I don't use the term gambling industry as a political slam on them. It's just, it's more appropriate way to refer.
More
them.
Accurate,
so,
right? I don't. I actually, I appreciated that point, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I used the phrase "gambling industry" and "gambling" column this morning about your book.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I'm not looking to, the way I come at this, and as a journalist and not as an activist, and so I tried. You know, I tried to really bend over backwards. I talked to many folks on the other side of this issue for the book, some of the industry officials, including Frank Fahrenkopf, head of the American Gaming Association, Commercial Casino Industries Group. I spoke to many of the scientists and researchers and others who are closely identified with the industry in an effort to make their point. I will say that in talking about the states, one thing that really was kind of, again, kind of amazing to me is that when you look at when states bring in legalized gambling, generally they put aside a portion of their winnings, a small portion, like about 1%, to their credit to fund efforts to reduce problem gambling, to try to prevent it, to raise public awareness, to subsidize treatment programs. But here's the thing, you know, when they're doing that, I don't think it should take a skeptic to conclude, and I write this in my book, that here's what they're actually saying. They say that, you know, we know we're willfully creating a new subclass of addicts in our community, but we'll at least try to fix them and mitigate any damage that is as a result of it. And to my mind, that's bad government. I mean, I don't know. There's no other two ways about it. That's not the way government should operate.
Tell me, Sam, how would you respond to, because you're going to get some serious pushback on this, I'm sure. And somebody might say, and in fact, online, in my column today online, one of the commenters, one of our readers said, well, he's biased because he himself has probably lost a significant amount of money in casino gambling.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess my main response is it's not a bad charge to level. I understand it. I don't think it's accurate because I went at this as a reporter primarily, and I think the fact that that I'm a gambler, that I know how casinos work, that I've spent a lot of time in them, that I know the players involved, everything up from the people who run the casinos to the dealer level folks to the gamblers themselves and their families, people I've talked to at all levels. I think that if anything, it helps to inform the book. So, you know, am I the perfect messenger? No. Certainly not, and that's in part why there are many reasons why this is not a memoir in any way. I mean, the stuff about me in the book is only 2% of the words in the book, all the rest of it, 98%, is what's happening to the country.
And you'd be criticized if you had not informed the reader of your own.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Absolutely. You know, and that's a great point. Yeah, and initially, you know, hey, this is it's not an easy thing. I mean, I understand that we're in the age of the daytime talk show where, you know, everyone's spilling their guts about everything. And, you know, I'm a little older school than that. I mean, generally, I was reluctant to do this. But I ultimately, if a reader's going to pick this up, some voter who maybe their first cousin has had gambling problems, so they have some kind of connection to it, and maybe they're in their city council is going to vote on a bill, and they just want to know more, and they read this, and they say, well, who's this author? It's not just that I'm a journalist who's fascinated by the issue, which is true, but also the fact that I have a personal connection to it. So that's why, you know, the very first words in the book, I go very briefly into my story.
So. Mm-hmm. Sam, what one more question on this, on your personal story, and then we'll move on. You live in the Washington, D.C. area now, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there games near you?
I don't know, because I haven't gambled since I moved out here, with the exception of I bought one $2 scratch ticket, and I won $5, so how about that?
So I'm you're up.
I'm up $3 since I moved out here. So
How long ago did you move out?
I moved out here about 3 months ago. So the closest, there are two of them. There's a card room and a casino in West Virginia, which is about, I've been told, an hour and a half's drive. I have not driven out there. Plus there's Atlantic City, which is like that, 2 hours away.
Do you have the urge?
It's sporadic, but it's right now it's been good to decompress and to focus on the new job. I have a new job out here, so that takes up all my energy and time. That added to promoting the book is what's taken up all my time and energy, so
okay. I
haven't been thinking about it much.
All right. Let's turn closer to home. You have a chapter early in the book on Las Vegas, and again, something that you know journalistically, having been a reporter here and then having studied problem gambling and also, participating a bit in yourself. Tell us about your Vegas chapter. What are the key points?
Well, I got to say, I'm glad you asked me about this, because there are two chapters in the book that I'm sort of, I don't want to say, well, let me just say the proudest of, and I'm the most than the one on Asian Americans and gambling among Asians is up there, but this Las Vegas chapter is probably the nearest and dearest to my heart. As you know, I've for about 5 years, and up until just several months ago. And I had visited there many, many times, and especially after I moved to Seattle, I flew down there at least a couple times a year to play poker and tournaments and what have you. And here's what I found. This is Vegas is truly unique in so many ways, as you know, but as story that had to be undertold, and this is not to, I need to give a shout out before I get into this, to folks at the Review Journal and folks at the Sun, for sure, many of whom, including yourself and Liz Benston, wrote a terrific series of stories several months ago, on this. And Liz, for years, has written many stories on problem gambling issues. But that said, despite all that great work, there had never been the big takeout on, with the exception of your series, but I had an even bigger stage with this book to write everything that I could about the way that I found, and ultimately here's what I concluded, which is that the rise of legalized gambling The immersion, complete inundation of legalized gambling throughout the Las Vegas Valley has helped turn Las Vegas into the most dysfunctional community in America. I mean, there's just no other way to phrase it. Now, I'm not saying, as some of your readers, that, you know, I read some of those comments, are saying, oh, he's saying that it's entirely connection A to B, as though problem gambling is causing all of these higher social costs. That's not true.
You're asserting just that they're connected in some way.
They're absolutely connected, yeah. So let me get to the meat of what I found. First is the studies that have been done, including the most recent study, which sadly is in 2002, about a decade ago, showed very clearly that Las Vegas has higher problem gambling rates than anywhere else in the country. About 6.4% of the adults have had gambling problems over their lifetime or within the last year, as opposed to other states. 6.4 is a big number in comparison with other states, where the total combined problem and pathological, the more serious pathological gamblers, is 2-3%, maybe 4 at the very most. You have in Las Vegas. You add that to the fact that there are about 100 Gamblers Anonymous chapters that meet weekly in the Las Vegas Valley. That is exponentially higher than anywhere else in the country if you look at it on a per capita basis. For example, look at New York City, which has about 4 times as many residents, just the 5 boroughs of New York residents, as the whole Las Vegas Valley is Clark County. They have 50 meetings per week, GA meetings, and Las Vegas is 100. So the average viewer might say, well, duh, of course, right, because Las Vegas has so much more gambling. Well, okay, that's my whole point, is that where there is a rise in legalized gambling for the community, forget about the strip, we're talking about the inundation of the local casinos, the slot machines, video poker machines in every bar, Kmart, most 7-Elevens, Kmart, restaurant, gas station in the Las Vegas Valley.
Now, the industry the industry would respond, right, by, they call it the theory, where when you, think that maybe when you casino gambling, legalized gambling into a new jurisdiction, that rates of problem rise, but that it settles back down, and that in our community, for instance, because there's no taboo about gambling, maybe we have less of a problem amongst young people. I've heard it likened to the Europeans and alcohol. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, the adaptation theory has been out there for a while. It's propounded or put forth mostly by this Harvard researcher, or used to be Harvard affiliated. He's still up in there in Boston, named Howard Schaefer. And it posits as exactly right. When gambling comes in, there's maybe to a community, there's an initial spike, but that over time, many, if not most folks, learn to quote unquote adapt, and that they no longer exhibit addictive symptoms. My answer is twofold. One is, first off, that's not a sure thing. There are researchers, top ones in Australia and New Zealand, that have concluded that, in fact, the opposite is the case, that adaptation does not occur, not nearly as often as Schaefer and other researchers in this country, by the way, whose studies are funded primarily by the gambling industry. Okay, that absolutely needs to be said, that they conclude adaptation does not occur. But here's the thing. I asked Dr. Schaefer for the book. I said, well, okay, let's say for a moment that your theory is exactly right. And I'm not, again, necessarily willing to say that, but let's say that it is. Even what he's saying in that instance is that for this early period when gambling comes into a new community, as has been happening around the country, there is a period of time when problem gambling rates spike, and all the pain that's associated with that, and you know full well, having interviewed lots of folks for your fine series last year, that all the pain that results and all the cost for the whole community, not just the friends and the family and the gamblers themselves, but the whole community that pays for these social costs. This happens in virtually every single instance, even under that adaptation theory. So I'd say that's sure thing from being a surefire sort of a response by the industry. I don't think that theory holds too much water.
Okay. Let me go back for a second. You had mentioned that you thought this was kind of an undercovered story in Las Vegas. And accepting, you know, not that there isn't coverage of problem gambling, but it doesn't seem to be a great focus on it. Why do you think that is? You, having been a reporter here yourself for several years,
I think it's you know, in part, look, it's understandable. It's human nature. This is I shouldn't say this because I'm no longer living there, but it's a company town, and the company is gambling, or they want to call it gaming, hospitality, whatever you call it. There's, you know, maybe less of it in connection with, you know, hotels offer a wider variety of things. People come there not just to gamble now, but it's a gambling town. And so it's just like if you go into, you know, some West Virginia or southern Pennsylvania town and coal mining is the industry, and folks ranging from the mayor to folks on the street to people involved in that industry are all going to be just a little bit defensive, have a little bit of a maybe jaded point of view in terms of the actual health and social impact of their main industry if there are negative ones. And certainly in gambling there is, as just as there is in things like coal mining or what have you. So it's not
see me as a journalist as a journalist, though, what I like to do is go to these company towns and stick a knife in the back of the company. That's the whole point.
Hey, look,
but you don't have to comment on that.
No. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to get there are a lot of listeners out there now who have their hackles up. Maybe people who came to town, they were out of work for a while, they found a fine dealing job that provides them good benefits and helps put their kids through school and feeds them and all that. I'm not knocking, you know, the industry. It's not my goal to have the destruction of the Las Vegas Strip or the disbanding of the lotteries around the country. I mean, I think what I'm hoping to do is simply raise awareness of risks involved in trying to spread legalized gambling to virtually every city and town in this country, which appears to be the model. One thing on a different chapter in the book, four states in 2009 and 2010, just over the last 2 years, looked to expand legalized gambling. This is more than has ever been the case. The recession is... Mm-hmm, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And one thing that I think what you're trying to say, what your reporting kind of shows, is that as these states consider expanded casino gambling, they should look to Las Vegas.
Thank you for that's exactly it. That's one of the main reasons I wrote this chapter on Las Vegas. Here's a model, folks, and forget about the Strip for a moment. Just look at the community of 2 million residents and look at the inundation of legalized gambling. And if you're a city councilman in Ohio or a voter in New Mexico or anywhere in between, where it's incumbent upon you to figure out whether legalized gambling is really a good option and you need even more and more of it, look to Las Vegas as what might happen in terms of the negative impacts that could occur.
Mm-hmm. Let me shift gears a little bit. We're familiar with all those social costs that you report so cogently. Let me talk about people, though. You profile a number of people that you've met who are dealing with gambling addiction. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. It really helps bring the book together. You're absolutely right. I mean, so much I think a reader can take of facts and figures and analysis, and the way a book like this hopefully works, and hopefully mine does, is through the stories of individuals. And so just looking at the Las Vegas chapter, I mean, I found I opened and I closed the chapter with a story of a guy named Howie C. Now, I know his last name, but I talked to him in his capacity as someone who is used to be a recovering gambler for many, many years, 37 years before he fell off the wagon. And this guy's story is fascinating to me in that he moved here back in like the 70s, I believe, and his gambling became hugely problematic. He joined GA, started going to meetings, and he eventually sort of took over the movement here in the sense that he founded so many of these weekly meetings around town, and he did all of the managerial work that helps keep these meetings going, and then he became a nationally known figure in the GA movement, Gamblers Anonymous movement. He had been, up until about a year and a half ago, something like that, the dates are, he had been recovering 37 years before he fell into, and that wasn't just a family, but the whole movement here based in town. Folks like Dr. Robert Hunter, who I talked to, head of the Problem Gambling Center in Las Vegas, really well known, and others who had befriended him and worked with him. It was devastating. And Carol O'Hare, who's another one with the Nevada Council on Problem Gambling, another terrific official there doing that type of work. They had all known Howie, and it was, so that telling his story was kind of devastating. I sat with him for hours at a diner in Las Vegas, and so I sort of opened the chapter by recounting his story a bit, and then at the end of the chapter, I go into my interview with him, and he's talking about how, you know, how difficult it is, but how crazy he was immediately after going, after falling off the wagon and placing these huge bets. And so I think, you know, what that story says is if it can happen to him, it can happen to anybody. But so there were folks like that. There was another gal, I think one of the other most poignant interviews I had in the whole book is in the Asian market. It's a young woman who was a graduate student at UCLA when I spoke with her. Her mom, she wasn't a gambler herself, but her mom certainly is. Her mom emigrated along with her dad from Vietnam.
And had been a tour guide, right, and came to Vegas that way?
Oh, actually, no, that's a different gal. She
okay,
opens
I'm sorry.
The chapter. Oh,
okay.
No, that's quite all right. This other woman, who I think I refer to as Laura Chen, but she's one of the very few people who I don't use, who I use a pseudonym for, because you know, virtually everybody else I name by name. But this young lady told just a very powerful story about her mom, her mom's gambling, and about how she and her sister did everything they could as adults to try to stop it, and now her parents are having to move back to Vietnam because they're too far indebted as a result of their gambling here. And so, you know, I tried to tell stories not just of the gamblers themselves, sort of woe is me, but from the family members, and then the stories of researchers too, and others. I mentioned Carol O'Hara runs the Nevada Problem Gambling Council. She's a very interesting sort of layered story mm-hmm. to tell. And then there were others in other chapters, some of the scientists and researchers. So I wanted to, and of course, gambling industry officials, too. Ron Reese I spoke to at length. He's the top spokesman for Las Vegas Sands. He's a vice president there. And he was very helpful for the Asian chapter. He showed me all around just how, you know, they're marketing toward high rollers and who in many cases are Asian Americans mm-hmm. In Venetian and Palazzo there. So
Sam, let me we got about a minute left. Let's talk quickly a takeaway for people who live in Las Vegas, where obviously gambling and the gambling industry are central and always will be.
I'd say that to keep aware and to try to help those around you. And if you're in a company, for example, and your company doesn't necessarily offer benefits for folks who for problem gambling, as they offer sort of employee assistance for alcoholism, drug abuse, that's one way to help. You know, it's to make sure that at every level, in the personal level, within businesses and a community level, that folks become more aware of the impact that it's having, and go at it from that. Again, I'm not suggesting that Las Vegas, first off, even if suggested it wouldn't, it's not like they're going to start getting rid of local casinos, and I'm not suggesting as such in any way, but be more aware of the impact that the gambling all around you is having on you.
Thanks so much. My guest has been Sam Skolnick. His new book is High Stakes, and I recommend that you buy. This is J. Patrick Kulik, and you've been listening to Neon Eden on KUNV. ¶¶